Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/BehindTheRacketPod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now,
hey everyone, Mike here. Thanks so much for supporting the Behind the Racket podcast. I'm recording this portion Monday morning, February 15th, 12:30 a.m. It is absolutely a blizzard outside of my hotel room in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, and just finished the ITA Division I Men's Team Indoor Championship, and North Carolina and Will Blumberg are guests this week, champions with a win over Baylor a couple of hours ago. Want to make sure we let you know that this interview was recorded before the tournament began. Time was very short for both Will and myself, and Noah joined us, of course, where he is preparing for a futures event in Florida this coming week. Will Blumberg, 23 years of age, out of Greenwich, Connecticut, NCAA singles finalist for North Carolina as a freshman, now in his fifth year with North Carolina. He wouldn't have been here playing for the Tar Heels had it not been for COVID, but he is in his fifth season in Chapel Hill. In terms of his professional career, despite having an incredible junior career, he's actually only played 28 professional matches, some of that due to injuries, and of course, just an incredible collegiate career, already an 8-time All-American. You'll hear a little bit about that, as well as much, much more, some of his very notable training partners over the years. So now, myself, Noah Rubin, and our guest, Will Blumberg. As I'm preparing here to do the broadcast for the ITA National Indoors, Noah is down in, this is really hard for myself and our guest, Will Blumberg, because Will, we're looking at like snow, ice, it's 10 degrees. We're recording on Thursday before the competition gets started. And Noah is sitting here, like there are palm trees and grass, and it's terrible. It's really frustrating because he looks like he's happy and warm and we are both frigid. And it's a tough ask.
He's got a t-shirt on.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I have sweatpants on. I'm actually sweating in them. and to be honest, Florida doesn't have grass. We all know that. I mean, well, there's fake stuff behind me, but it is nice. It is nice not to. I missed the fifth snowstorm in New York, so I'm glad you guys get to feel it a little bit.
Yeah, this is more like ice and just frigid.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Is there sun there? I think I see a little bit of sun, though.
No.
No, not today.
Will is joining us, and as you might be able to hear, he is wearing a mask. I am wearing a mask here in Champaign. They are pretty strict about COVID measures. They've done better testing than pretty much anywhere in the country. They are rolling out vaccine better than anyone in the country. And so Will is here for ITA National Indoors. What's the experience been like? And if you can kind of compare what it's been like on this campus and how they've prepared for this with how you've done it at North Carolina.
Yeah, it was interesting. We all had to get tested before we came on Monday. We at school had been getting tested twice a week. So we've been pretty prepared. They did a good job here today. All of us, every team got tested this morning. They had rapid results, so we were all negative. So it was cool. I think they prepared very well. I've heard they've done a great job of testing. It's awesome that they've been able to even have this event. Mm-hmm. We're thankful for that. So, hopefully everyone's negative and able to play. They've done a great job here. At UNC, they've done a really good job, too. The fall was a little crazy. I think students coming back was, unfortunately tough, but they probably could have been prepared for that. So looking forward to a good week. Hopefully everyone stays negative. And
yeah,
that's most important.
Kind of take us through the college tennis right now. I practiced with, you know, like Brian Shih, who is at Harvard, and like they canceled early. You know, talk about, you know, how long before you knew that there was actually going to be a season, what the season looks like, how you're preparing, is there practice? Take us through it.
Yeah. I mean, to be quite honest with you, it's kind of like every day is different. You know, I didn't really believe there'd be a season until our first match was played. I still don't know if we're going to play, you know, tomorrow. Seriously, because, you know, it's kind of like same as it is like when you're playing a tournament, except on the college campuses, they're super strict. So, like, if I test negative or one of our three guys test negative today, I'm sure that our team's not allowed to play.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, you prepare as best you can, but there are so many things you can't control. You know, you can to the best of your ability of quarantining, but we had to fly here. So, you know, I had a face shield and, you know, school policy and 95 masks, but you just do your best. But there's so many things you can't control. It's kind of frustrating.
It's, you know, a lot has been made about the college football and basketball seasons and how they're doing it, especially because those are such money-making opportunities for the universities. It's obviously very different for all of the Olympic sports, the non-revenue sports. I think a lot of, I've felt that a lot of the athletes, especially on the basketball and football side, they're taking a lot of risk because of the fact they're not making any of that money. It's different for Noah, you know, than it is for you. How do you kind of handle that with the fact that you are still a student athlete as opposed to somebody who is getting paid to take this risk?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough. First of all, I think, you know, to be honest, without football even being played, probably tennis wasn't played this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are thankful for that. Basketball, they've had some ups and downs this year of you know, different COVID situations and stuff. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, for me personally, I'm, you know, fifth year, I'm not doing very much. I'm not, you know, doing anything really.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's not there. So I'm just hanging at home. I'm just practicing going home, as boring as that sounds. So my day-to-day kind of risk is not very high besides this flight. And we have maybe one or two more flights for the ACC season besides we drive. You know, I can't really say that I'm at that much risk, although you could go to a restaurant and get it, whatever, you know.
Right.
But I'm limiting risk, and I'm just thankful to be able to be playing matches. If I had left school and not, you know, who knows, I might play two matches the whole,
right,
you know, semester. So
right.
I'm just happy to be able to play matches.
Take this for what it is. I think you're in your 10th year of school. I feel like you've been in school forever.
Me too.
You know, kind of bring us through, you know, you as a person, as a player, where you're seeing yourself, how you see your game, and what kind of, you know, a lot of people would say you are arguably far talented enough to play professional tennis right now. What is keeping you in school, and what are your thoughts post-school?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of questions there. I'll try and, like, answer them, like, as whatever. So I think that, like, growing up, you know, we kind of grew up in the same area. School is important. It's academics were always really important to my family, and it's, you know, my parents especially. So college for me was always something that I wanted to do. I think in America, college always seemed like a really cool option. Winning a national championship was awesome. So I think that drove me to go to college. I think, although I had a lot of success my freshman year, I realized quickly in playing like that summer, I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't talented. You know, I just didn't have it yet. You know, I felt like I could compete. I was there. I had flashes. I had played really well against Jordan Thompson that summer. And I was like, okay, I have opportunities to be here, but one, I don't believe that I should be here right now, and two, I'm not healthy enough. So I went back my sophomore year, you know, did well, blah, blah, blah. Then I basically just had some injuries. I'm not a big excuse guy, but it just didn't make sense for me to leave. Like, I wasn't...
The ankle was the big one, right?
I had my elbow, okay. Elbow surgery October 2018, which was tough. I actually saw... I played Noah right before that. But I had my elbow, and then the next summer, I had my ankle. So okay. I was like, there's just no way I'm, like, leaving. And then after this past season, my senior year, I was for sure ready to go. I was done. I was playing well. I actually felt mentally I was there, and then, you know, COVID happened, and there's not much I could do.
In that regard, you mentioned, you know, the Jordan Thompson. That was, I believe, semifinal Binghamton that year. And I think... a lot of players would have left. So, you know, you talk about you didn't feel you were ready. What does that mentally mean for you?
Well, I mean, I think, like, you know, fortunately as Americans, we're able to see so many people kind of go through the path. College tennis has become more regularly. Noah went to college tennis, you know, through the college tennis ranks. It's just like you watch people, and I was pretty honest with myself. It's like, okay, I'm talented enough, but I'm not strong enough to do this week after week. I don't really want to do this right now. I don't want to travel and like grind. I don't want, you know, I'm not like interested in doing that when I can still get better, and college is a good place for me academically and for tennis. And mainly I wasn't like healthy enough, strong enough. Like with my injuries, I was just feeling like I have to do so many things to prepare. I can play 2 weeks, and then if I'm injured again, what am I doing? I might as well be able to just take classes, and I was able to play tournaments throughout that whole fall. So it just made more sense for me to do that when I was, you know, I don't know. It really hit me more like this past year. I really wanted to turn pro after my senior year, but I was like, you know, instead of just wanting to post the Instagram and like do it and like have all the hype, like just take it easy, you know, like sit back, because you never know how long COVID will be.
I have a memory, and it's kind of fuzzy. Most of my memories are, and Noah will tell you that's because I drink way too much. That's fine.
Way too much.
but if I remember correctly, I believe it was Dallas a couple of years ago that you played. Yep. You got a wild card there.
Yep.
And were you working with Diego, or was Diego on site working?
Yeah,
that week he was working with. If I remember correctly, and for those who don't know Will, I mean, you're very close with Tommy, Paul. That's kind of your group, right? And I remember seeing you very, very emotionally upset after losing that match in Dallas, and I can't even remember who it was against.
Me either.
but I remember seeing that because I think I even overheard you talking about comparing yourself to Tommy specifically, and Tommy obviously has had a lot of success, and Riley and Taylor and all those guys. How did you come to grips with that idea that you can't really necessarily compare yourself to a player at that stage in your game?
Yeah. I mean, I think even like the decision of going to college is where it all starts. You know, I mean, those guys didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. You know, at that time it was like me and Nathan Ponwith, who did go to college. And he's had awesome success in college too. But it's just like you get to a point in which like they're having awesome success. You know, I'm having success at this point. Obviously it's very different.
Yep.
But you kind of just like draw inspiration more than like, want to be there. Of course I want to be there. Of course I'm cheering them on. But at some point you just have to understand that there are two roads, you know, like 2 + 2 = 4. So is 1 + 3. Mm. So like there are other ways to get there. And I think probably what was frustrating me more is that when you're in college, and Noah probably can attest a little bit, although he was there a shorter time, you don't have many opportunities when you get to play Challenger, especially like Dallas. We happen to be playing Texas in Austin. Mm. So that's why, you know. So it was like you want to make the most of it to have the opportunities, and that was probably frustrating me at the time.
Yeah.
But things like that.
I mean, obviously, people joke that I was only in school for about 6 weeks, but you know, I always wanted to hear from, you know, somebody, especially you, that you're going on your fifth year now. How does the motivation to, you know, I struggled watching, I think it was my year, Tiafoe got the wild card to French Open after a good, you know, three tournaments in Tallahassee or whatever. How does the motivation to, you know, to want to play pro after so much time and like really enjoying that life, you know, how does that stick with you throughout, you know, your experience in college?
Yeah, I mean, it comes in waves, you know. I mean, I'd be lying to say if like there aren't times where I'm like, you know, getting a great, you know, whatever, great education, and then going to get a job seems cool. But then I'm like, when I start to be healthy and like playing, I'm like, okay, I really believe I can do this. There's a large part of me that really believes I have so much to give to tennis, and we have given so much to tennis. And no matter whatever the road takes, like I really want to pursue that. You know, so there's a lot, especially when I'm playing well, or even when I'm not winning, but I'm just like doing things the right way. My body feels good. I just want to give it like my best shot, because truly, like deep down, I really feel like I have, you know, an ability that can get me to a certain point, and I'd, you know, be lying if I said that I didn't want to do that. But there are times in college when you think the grass is greener, but.
How is that transition going to look? Because obviously at the end of the next 3 months, no matter what they look like, you're going to transition into professional tennis. Yeah. I mean, maybe you can get a seventh year of eligibility, who knows? But what does that transition look like? How are you using this season to prepare for that eventuality?
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, I think, you know, and being completely honest, it was frustrating that COVID happened for everybody. For my situation, it was frustrating that I couldn't leave at the time. But playing in college tennis and getting 30 matches this semester is the best thing for me. It just is.
Yeah.
I'll have motivation. One, I'll be fit. I'll be prepared. I'll be having like momentum. You know, so using that going into the tournaments this summer, although I have no idea what tournaments there are this summer.
Right, right. None of us do. To be fair, none of us
whatever,
do.
whatever I'll be able to play, I feel like, you know, I'll be able to be playing well. First of all, I have to find somewhere where I'm happy. I don't do very well, as many tennis players do, but when I'm training in an environment that doesn't, I'm not happy, like, with the surroundings and everything, it's just, like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know? I think that's why college tennis is so good for so many people. I'll look for that. I'll talk with my family where's the best place for me, and then kind of go from there and try and build, you know, whatever team around you that you can to the extent that you can or just starting, you know, so we'll see.
I do want to go back, you know, I actually tell this story quite often when people ask me, you know, what was like a tactic somebody used? And I don't even know. But so we played, I was playing well, I was up a set and like 3-0. And this guy crosses the net and says, man, you're playing way too well today. And for some reason, it fucked me up so good. I'm like, wait, like, really? Maybe I'm playing like unbelievably well and I can't keep this up. And like, I blink and it's 3-0 in the third. And I'm like, holy shit, like that worked. And all I was thinking, like, I was pissed, but like at the same time, I was like, it's like a good effort by him. Like, I didn't even know if it was a tactic. You're a really nice kid. So it's like, fuck, like maybe
he was
just saying
it. I can promise it wasn't a tactic.
Right. But like, I looked at it. I'm like, that fucked me up so well. I look back and I tell people that I was like, I'm telling you, you're down like, you know, 6-2, 3-0. I'm just go to the guy and say, man, you're playing way too well today. I don't know. I can't do anything.
I feel like you should be using that a lot lately.
Oh, that's dumb.
I haven't even touched a tennis court. I don't know what you're talking about.
I will say, though, like, things like that I actually do just actually, like, trying to be nice. Like, you're actually playing very well. It does mess up more people than you think.
Because, yes.
Like, I don't try and do that to be, like, rude or anything. But, like, when someone hits a good shot, I'm like, oh, nice shot, great shot. Or, like, someone serves, like, 3 aces in a game when we're changed sides, I'm like, great serves. Like, what am I going to do? I don't know. It's just, like, sometimes people could mistake it for weakness. For me, it's just like, I'm just calling a spade a spade. If someone hits a good shot, whatever. It doesn't bother me. I don't know. It bothers more people than you think, but I don't try and do that to bother people.
Well, we mentioned, of course, your friendship.
We all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We mentioned, of course, Tommy Paul. You have also spent time with the Bryans. I don't know that I know anybody more connected who's not a professional than yourself. What's it been like having the opportunity to train with the Bryans? I think Jack Sock is as well. I mean, that's like elite level training opportunities for someone like yourself. How do you try to engage those moments and really kind of learn from them and build with them?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I've just been fortunate enough to get to know them. I think, you know, with Bob Bryan, I was training with Dean Goldfine, actually.
Who's now with Sebi.
Yeah, yeah. I was training with him in Florida. I was staying in his place. And he lives in the same town as Bob. So that was how I originally met Bob. I was playing ITFs and he was, you know, on tour. And so then when I went to French Open, we trained. And then Wimbledon trained. We trained that summer. So then just throughout that, it was just an unbelievable opportunity to just pick his brain. I mean, no, I'm sure you've trained with them. But they train harder than, like, anyone I've ever met
Insane.
In my life. Like, when I first practiced with Bob, I had to go to the locker room and, like, lie down for 45 minutes in the middle of practice. Seriously, but it just taught me, like, so many things about, like, professionalism, what it means to be, like, a pro's pro. But he's also such an incredible guy.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, like, they just taught me so many things. And same with Jack. Like, you know, for a lot of people, obviously, have many things to say about Jack. He's actually been insanely nice to me. He's taught me many things. You know, I've asked him many, many questions. And he's actually training really hard now.
Yeah.
So he's been incredible for me, too. It's just awesome to see that level. Those guys have reached, like, the top of the top, you know. So Bob and Mike especially have been amazing for me. And I'll call Bob with doubles advice or singles advice or anything. So it's just been awesome to have those guys in my corner, but mainly just to ask questions because I have so many things to learn, you know, from anyone. So to have them has just been unbelievable.
You spoke about, you know, you have so much to give to the world of tennis. but what does it mean to you? What does success mean to you? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Like that same old dumb question, but you know, what does it mean for you? Does it matter if you're top 500, top 200, you're not even thinking about that. What does success in tennis look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, you know, first of all, when I was, I'd be lying to say like top 100 for me was like, okay, if I make top 100, that's cool, I made it, you know? I think as I gotten older, if I really, and I'm very honest with myself, if I give like 100% of everything I have to the sport, wherever I go, that's like, I'll be happy with that. But anything less, and there have been times when I'm like, listen, I have to do better. Like I'm not training enough, I'm not focusing enough. If I really do that to the best of my ability, you know, I'll be happy. I really want to be top 100 in the world, more than that, better than that, singles, doubles, whatever it is. But, you know, success for me isn't necessarily like a number, because I feel like I'll always want to get, you know, higher than that. But it's kind of like within myself being honest as to where I want to go.
And you're ready for the grind.
Yeah.
You're ready for the mentally. Yeah.
I wasn't when I was younger, but definitely now.
I would be remiss as we start to wrap up here, Will. You know, you and I texted six months ago because you were trying to take my job. You are entering the podcast world.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your podcast, why you started it, what you tried to get out of it, and where you think it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I started over quarantine mainly, to be honest, similar with the Bryans or Jack or anyone, whether I'm talking to you or Noah or anyone, you're always like just trying to take like little pieces of information, right?
Right.
People that have been there before or done it or been on a similar path or much higher path, right? So I like to just, you know, pick people's brains. So when I started the podcast, which is called The Journey of Success, I've been slacking so much lately, but just part of what it is, what it is. It's harder than you think. I just started it. Yeah.
Especially if you have a partner who doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
I wish
I had a partner, because then maybe it would push me to do it.
My partner used to have a mohawk. I mean, give me a break. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, I just like you said, I'm fortunate enough to know, you know, some people. And just through, you know, genuine friendships, I was able to get them to come on and just pick their brains. I mean, I think like it's such an unbelievable asset to be able to learn from guys like Bob and Mike, who are by far the greatest doubles team ever. You know, Jack Sock and anyone really in different industries. And you just find that like success and people's journeys are all different, but they have like certain qualities. You know, the ability to work and determination and just different qualities in whatever field they are. So just to pick up on anything like that, I mean, I'm trying to do something, you know, in tennis that you know, will be a reach or a stretch or whatever it is for me. So any little piece of information I can get that will help me along that journey, I think, you know, I'd be dumb not to.
So what's the one piece of information you want to ask my partner, Mr. Noah Rubin, Junior Wimbledon champion?
Yeah, I
was
watching that.
I actually thought you were going to be an asshole and be like, can you please put something for Noah Rubin to just get something, just to grasp onto, some hope, some glimmer of hope.
I'm trying to put the young man on the spot here as a podcaster. Now he has to come up with a question for you. You know, I want to test his podcasting chops.
I think it'd be pretty easy. I mean, Noah went through college tennis. He had you know, incredible success. And then now, you know, he's on the grind of what real tennis is. For most people, it's a grind. It's not like, you know, all the glory, and it's not, you're living the life all the time. So it's like, for me, my question to Noah would be like, how do you continue grinding? You know, it's harder than people think. I mean, it's harder to like, you know, it's a tough answer, but that's
Jesus,
like what it is.
Like, you just cut to the core of Noah Rubin.
I don't. Yeah, I wish actually, and this is something I just spoke about recently and kind of answering a roundabout way, is I wish I had either one or two more years at school. I think that would have been beneficial for me, because one thing that you harped on is the understanding, which, you know, I kind of understood a little bit, was I need happiness, you know, outside the court. I need, you know, the surrounding, I need the people around me to kind of be all the same wavelength, and if not, I am just battling every day. And it makes this job so much tougher. So I think I wanted a little bit more of that school competitive atmosphere, team atmosphere. And I think, honestly, coming back to New York earlier, but again, I still don't have a team around me, working on a team now. I think those are the two things. I think getting to quote unquote happy place is really what I want. And that's what I would tell anybody coming out of school right now, is, you know, find that place. Because no matter where you are, you can kind of build that team around you wherever you are. I mean, sadly, right now I have a fake blue mohawk podcast host, and that's literally all I got next to me on my tennis team. But it's good. It's going great. Everything's great.
The first time he's ever actually lied on this podcast. That's fantastic. Well, I see. Will, your coach is nearby, so I think that means your time is up with us, and he's getting a coffee, and I think I'm probably headed the same way. But thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
National team indoors over the next couple of days. This is going to come out on Monday after you've competed, but I know I'm looking forward to seeing you a little bit more often on the Challenger circuit. I don't know about Noah, though. I don't know if he's looking forward to it nearly as much as I am.
No, I'm excited to see you. Actually, you're one of the nicer guys on tour, so we'll be happy to have you out here, and it will hopefully mute out Mike a little bit. So good luck this week.
I'll keep telling you, good plan when we play, and hopefully it doesn't mess you up too much.
Nice shot.
great play, Noah. Love seeing you out here.
All right, Will Blumberg, thank you so much.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.